in the course of the study of Panchagni Vidya, we discovered that life is ultimately a sorrow on account of one's being subjected to the process of transmigration. Due to the fact that there are higher pressures exerted upon the individual, and these pressures compel one to be driven along the course of creativity. And as long as the ultimate cause of this pressure is not realized as identical with one's own self, one is not going to attain freedom from samsara or the cycle of metempsychosis. This cause of ultimate freedom is the self of all, the realization of which is true freedom. And that self is the universal reality. This was told to us in the subsequent section dealing with the Vaishvanara Vidya. Then in the sixth chapter, the subject was continued in a different fashion altogether, whereby it was explained by various analogies and comparisons, illustrations, etc., how there can be only one being and every detail in creation is only a form taken by this one being in the process of creation, so that there is only one being and not two beings. That being is the self, the Atman, was the subject of the discourse of sage Buddhalaka in the sixth chapter of the Upanishad. Now we are moving towards the seventh chapter, which is a very prominent one in the whole Upanishad, because it expounds the magnificent doctrine of the Bhuma or the Absolute, the plenum of being, the fullness of reality. And this it does in a Socratic manner, gradually taking the mind of the student from the lowest reality conceivable to the highest, stage by stage, indicating thereby that nothing is lost when the Absolute is realized. When God is attained, nothing of the world is lost. Everything is gained in a supersensible manner. Just as when you catch the original, you cannot be said to have lost the shadow. The shadow is a part of the original. It is there included. All the lesser degrees of reality, every form of manifestation, every nama and rupa in this creation is a lesser degree. And it does not mean that the lesser degree is excluded from the higher degree. The higher includes the lower, and the highest is everything, and that is all-inclusive. This is the subject of the seventh chapter, which begins with the great sage Narada approaching the master Sanat Kumara for spiritual instruction and spiritual solace. Narada was not only learned in all the arts and the sciences, but was himself a great saint and a sage. There was practically nothing that he did not know. He is reputed and renowned throughout the literature of the epics and the Puranas as a unique personality in many ways. He could travel through the earth and through the atmosphere and the heavens and talk to the gods personally. And he had therefore a free passport, as it were, to move through every realm and every plane of being. Such was his capacity. Expresses his grief over the fact that he knows so many things, but he does not have peace of mind in spite of all this knowledge. There is something missing. In spite of every kind of learning of which he is a master and in which he has specialized, "Great Sire, teach me. I have come to you as a humble student." This is how Narada, the master, a sage himself, approaches the divine teacher Sanat Kumara. Adhihi bhagava iti hopa sasada Sanat Kumaram Naradaha. "Great Sire, Master, Divine Sage, here I am at your feet." Teach me. It was a very simple question. Teach me. What should I teach you? What is your difficulty? You are yourself a very learned person. Let me know what you already know, and if there is anything left, I shall tell you later on. What is it that you already know? What is the education that you have already acquired? Tell me what you already have learned or known, then speak to me. This is the reply of Sanat Kumara to Narada. "Yad vetha tena ma upasida tataha tam urdhvam vachyami. Tataha urdhvam vachyami." If there is anything left out beyond what you have learnt already, well, let me see to it. But what is it that you have already learnt? Let me hear you recount the entire history of your knowledge. Narada said, "I have learnt so many things, of course. Great Master, I have studied the Rig Veda. I am proficient in it. I have studied the Yajur Veda. I am a master of it. I am an expert in the Sama Veda. I know the Atharva Veda. I am a master of the epics and the Puranas. And I know everything about grammar. Nothing unknown. I know mathematics. I know augury. I know the science of treasures. I am an expert in logic. I know ethics and politics. I know astrology and astronomy. I know the 6 auxiliary limbs of the Vedas. I know physical science. I know astronomy. And I know music, arts, dancing. What is left now? There is nothing practically through the course of which I have not passed. He has a degree in every science and every art. this is what I have learnt, my dear master. So I answer your question, what I have already said. Sahovacha Rigvedam Bhagavodhyemi Yajurvedam Samavedam Atharvanam Chaturtham Itihas Puranam Panchamam Vedanam Vedam Pitriyam Rashim Daivam Nidhim Vakovakyam Ekayanam Devavidyam Brahmavidyam Bhutavidyam Chatravidyam Nakshatravidyam Sarpadevjanavidyam Etat Bhagavodhyemi. So here is the list of all the certificates that I have got. Oh, this is what you have studied, said the great master. This is only name, he said. He put dust over everything. All this knowledge is nothing, he said. That is why you have no peace of mind. Soham Bhagavo Mantra Videvasmi. Narada says, yes, these are only words, really speaking. These are only nomenclatures. This is only a catalogue or the list of the branches of learning that I have given you. And I have heard from other people, says Narada, that a person who knows the self crosses over sorrow. What is this self? I am in sorrow. I am in a state of grief. In spite of all this learning that I have, I have come to you, great master, with a request to take me beyond the ocean of sorrow. I have an internal suffering which has not been removed by my learning or my knowledge. Soham Bhagavo Mantra Videvasmi. I have a lot of information about every art and every science. I know the names of all the arts and sciences. Mantra Videvasmi. Natmavit. I don't know the substance of these arts and sciences. While the name is known, the form connected to these names is not known to me. Everything that is an indicator has an indicated. Every name has a form corresponding to it. If you utter a particular name corresponding to an object, no doubt you have an idea of that object. But you do not possess that object merely because you have an idea of that object. So is the case with this learning. It is only an idea about certain things. But the things themselves are beyond one's control. You can have an idea of the inner structure of the sun, solar system, but you cannot have any sway over the sun or the control over the sun. You may have information about every blessed thing in the world, and you have therefore an ideological knowledge of the contents of everything in this world, but they are not under your control, they are not your property, they cannot be said to help you in any manner whatsoever. So this was the position of the theoretical learning of Narada and the case of any kind of theoretical learning. It has no connection with the reality, the fact as such, the form indicated by the name. So I am only a knower of the mantras, the names, the ideas. I have an intellectual knowledge, theoretical information, am an expert in understanding the nature of things, but the self of these things is beyond me. I have not known the self of these things. Mantra videvasmi natma vidhi. Shrutam heva me bhagavadrashebhya tarati shoka matma vidhi. Even from you, people like you have heard once that if you know the self of a thing, you are free from sorrow. Soham bhagavaha shochami. Here I am, a specimen of sorrow, before you seated. Tam ma bhagavan shokasya param tarayate. I have no other resort except you, the great master. Take me across this sea of sorrow. Shokasya param tarayate. Iti tagum hovacha yadvai kincha eta dadhya jishtha namahi vaitati. There is a great point in whatever you have learned, no doubt. But this knowledge has not helped you for a simple reason. Nothing can help you unless it is a part of your being, unless it is a part of yourself. Nothing that is outside you can be of any help to you. Anything that is extraneous to yourself is not going to free you from sorrow. The source of your sorrow is what is outside you. And that is an external self for you. It is not the primary self. Thus, the knowledge that you have about these things you have mentioned just now is not the knowledge of the self of these things, but the knowledge of the names of these things, the nomenclature of these things, and you have an idea of these things. This is what they call a theoretical knowledge of these things in the world. But what is the good of it? So, my dear Narada, all this is name, these are words, this is language, this is theory, this is idea, this is information, nothing more than this. As a matter of fact, what you said just now, Rigveda, Yajurveda, Samaveda, Atharvaveda, Itihasa, Purana, this science, that science, this art, that art, all this is nothing but words and words and words. They seem to tell you a lot, but they cannot ultimately help you unless you have entered into their being and unless you have become their self. Nāma-māra-gvedo yajur-veda-sāma-vedaha ātara-vana-cātur-tha-itihāsa-purāṇam-pañca-mo-vedānam-veda-pitriyam-pitriyo-rāśir-daivo-nitir-vāko-vākyam-ekāyanam-deva-jana-vidyā-bhuma-vidyā-bhūta-vidyā-kṣatra-vidyā-kṣatra-vidyā-sarpa-deva-jana-vidyā. Nāma-eva-etat. Nāma-upāsva. Now, well, I tell you this is only theory and therefore it is not of much consequence in your life. But it has an importance in life because that is the beginning of knowledge. Though mere information is not of any ultimate utility in one's practical life, it is not without some utility. Because learning begins with gathering of information. The idea of an object precedes the real knowledge of the object. Unless you have some concept of the object, how can you approach the object at all? So the concept by itself is not the substance, no doubt. But you have to approach the substance through the concept, through the idea. The practice comes after theory. If you have no theoretical knowledge of a thing, the scientific background of every particular art or science, then you cannot master that science. The technological application of the knowledge is subsequent to the mastery of the theory of it, as is the case with every science, every art, every branch of learning. So when I say that it is all name, in one way what I mean is that it is not of ultimate value, which is the reason why you are not really happy. But yet it has a meaning, because it is the initial step in the process of the ascent of the soul to the Supreme Reality. From the lowest degree of manifestation, one has to gradually ascend to the next step, and then to the third step, the fourth step, etc. What appears to us at the very outset in this physical life of ours is that objects are outside us, the world is external to us, and we have only an information by way of nomenclature about these things. So this is the first stage in the knowledge of the things. When you wish to gain a knowledge of any object, the first thing that you do is to gain an information about that object. You have a descriptive knowledge of that object. This is what is meant by saying the name of that object. The name of an object includes every kind of information about the object. Thus, says Sanat Kumara to Narada, you first of all assure yourself that you have a complete knowledge of objects insofar as their name goes. Though beyond that you cannot go, at least within that realm you may be a master. Have you a correct descriptive knowledge of these things? Now, the whole principle of the ascent of the soul to higher stages of realization is that unless the law operating in the lower realm is fully fulfilled, the higher cannot be reached. When we say that the lower is inadequate, we do not mean that it is bereft of all reality. It has an element of truth in it. And every degree of reality is to the extent of the law operating within it is meaningful. And we have to master it, not by ignoring it or disregarding it, but by having a thorough knowledge of it to the extent it goes. And by obeying the laws of that particular realm in which one finds oneself at any given moment of time. We cannot close our eyes to the action and reaction produced by the operation of the laws in a particular realm or degree of reality, in case we are contents of that particular level of reality. We should not invoke the laws of a higher realm when we are involved in a lower realm. Then we will come a cropper. So this is what this is the mistake that many people do, even in the practice of spiritual life. They suddenly think that they are God-men, or they are about to jump into the well of God and drink the nectar of ambrosia, but they are caught hold of by their very legs through the laws that operate in the physical world. Knowledge does not mean ignorance of any particular aspect of experience. It is a total comprehension of facts as such. Even bondage has to be known in its true structure. When we are bound, we must know why we are bound. That is real knowledge. You cannot say, well, I am not concerned with the stages of bondage, I am concerned with freedom. But what is freedom? It is knowledge of the causative factors behind bondage. Just as cure of an illness is the knowledge of the causative factors of illness and then knowledge of the etiology and pathology, etc., of the whole suffering of the patient, then the medicine comes. So, it is necessary to know where we are placed. We should not have any kind of misgivings about where we are actually situated. Are we in the physical world? Or are we in the social atmosphere of people? Where are we caught up? We are caught up in various intricate networks of life which reveals itself in various degrees of experience. Now, each degree has to be paid its due. As they say, you must pay the devil its due. Though it is a devil, it does not matter. The due has to be paid. And then only you can be free from the clutches of the devil. So, the devil is nothing but the law that operates in a particular realm. The world of externality, objectivity, is the world in which we live. And therefore, we can go only to the extent of the law that operates in this world of externality. The lowest degree of knowledge, as was pointed out, is informative knowledge of objects. If there is a mountain in front of you, a mile away from you, you cannot have any knowledge about it except that it is of such and such a dimension and it is located at such a distance, etc., etc. So Sanat Kumara points out, to the extent name goes, to the extent theoretical learning goes, to that extent be a master. Whatever be the degree of reality in which you are, be a master of that. When you go to Rome, be a Roman. This is a very good adage, which means to say, you must be friendly with the atmosphere in which you are, whatever the atmosphere be. And you must be in harmonious with the law operating there. Then you become a master of that atmosphere. Otherwise, you will come at loggerheads with the external environment. So, Nama Upasva, first stage of meditation is mentioned here. The first stage of meditation is ideological. It is conceptual. You may call it theoretical. It is the operation of the mind in respect of an object. The object is not under one's control. It is far away. You have only a thought of the object. But that is enough for the time being. Because you are in that level only. So, Nama Upasva. Every stage of meditation or transcendence mentioned here is a stage of the identification of the self with that particular degree of reality. This is very important to remember. We will be taken gradually from stage to stage. Now, when we are taken to a higher stage, what is implied is that the lower stage has already become a part of one's own self in deep meditation and experience. It does not remain anymore as an object outside. You have already become that in self-absorption. And then only you can be given access to the realm of a higher degree of reality. So, Nama Upasva, now in the first step, this is what you can do, Narada. You complete the process of absorbing the contents of your knowledge to the extent they go in this world by deep meditation. This is conceptual meditation. Sayo nama brahmetyu paste yavan namano gatam tatra asya yatha kamacharo bhavati yo nama brahmetyu paste asti bhagavo namnaha bhuya iti namno vava bhuya asti tanme bhagavan brahmetu. Whoever contemplates name as Brahman, which means to say whoever regards the object of meditation as absolute, gains whatever that object does include within its gamut. The principle of meditation is this: whatever the object be of your meditation, that has to be taken as absolute. There should not be anything external to it. Because if the mind can conceive something higher than that particular object, that thing becomes your object of meditation. The point is that the object that you have chosen for your meditation should be the last point of the reach of your mind, beyond which it cannot go. Then it becomes the absolute. So the absolute is only a name that we give to the completest possible reach of the mind in any level or degree of experience. So nama is Brahma, it says, name is Brahman, by which it means name is the absolute, inasmuch as you are in the realm of names only. Why should you not take the higher degree as the absolute and not the lower one? Because the higher one cannot be the content of the mind. Suppose you are asked to meditate on the heavenly regions. You cannot, because you don't know what it means. The heavenly regions are beyond the reach of the mind. You will only superimpose physical pictures on your imagination of the paradise or Brahmaloka, etc. So this is not what is intended. You only limit yourself to the extent of your knowledge and complete the meditation regarding that particular object as absolute in itself. So Narada, take name as the absolute. And to the extent the name goes, to the extent of the reach of your mind, theoretically, conceptually, to that extent you are free. So you know very well there are learned people in this world, very educated people, masters of science, etc. They have freedom within that realm, not beyond that. To the extent that knowledge can go, to the extent of the applicability of that learning, there is freedom. But where that knowledge is not applicable, there is no freedom. So it depends upon the realm in which you find yourself. If you are in an academic realm, the academic knowledge helps. But it will not work when you are in the middle of a river or the ocean, for instance, where another kind of knowledge is necessary. Or you are threatened with some kind of catastrophe in life, where another kind of knowledge is necessary. So, the knowledge that one gains is helpful to a person within the limit of the operation of that knowledge, within the atmosphere in which it works, and to the extent of the operation of the law pertaining to that branch of learning. Yo nama brahmetyu paste, whoever meditates thus has freedom in this manner to that extent and in that particular realm only. But Narada asks, is there not anything more than this? Yes, there is something more than this. What is something that is more than name? That which causes the expression of the name is greater than name. The linguistic designation or definition in respect of an object has at its background the science of speech. This is what they call the science of linguistics. The general nomenclature or the groups of names in respect of objects, all these are particularized, applied forms of an inner science which is linguistics, which is the principle of speech itself, how speech is made possible. Speech is a verbal expression of a force that is generated in one's own self. In occult circles, we are told that behind the verbal expression or the utterance of speech, there are subtler operations taking place inside the body, and these stages of inner working are called in the language of these occult sciences para, paschanti and madhyama. Vaikari is the outermost expression, the audible expression, the visible expression of speech is called vaikari. This is what you call name, where it is identified with particular objects. But the inner aspect of it is the principle of speech. So the very scientific principles that is behind the utterance of names, speech as it is by itself is higher than name. So Narada, speech is higher than name. Vagva va namna bhuyasi. Vagva, Rigvedam, etc. All that you have learned, Rigveda, Ayurveda, Samaveda and all these sciences, everything has speech at its background. Because of the principle of speech that is there at the back of the expressions of this theoretical learning in language, this learning has become possible. So the cause is superior to the effect. This is what is intended. Everything conceivable is ultimately included in the expression of language. Here is the dutiful list. Vagvava namano bhuyasi, vagva argvedam, vijnavedi, yajurvedam, samavedam, asarvanam, chaturtham, itihasapuranam, panchamam, vedanam, vedam, pitriyam, rashim, devam, mithim, vakovakyam, ekayanam, Deva Vidyam, Brahma Vidyam, Bhuta Vidyam, Tatra Vidyam, Nakshatra Vidyam, Sarpadevyana Vidyam, Divam Cha, Prithivim Cha. Not only these sciences and arts, but the earth and the heaven, all these are known only by name and therefore by speech. All the elements, earth, water, fire, air and ether, Vayu Cha, Akasha Cha, Apasha, Tejasha, Devamsha, Manushyamsha, Pashumsha, वयांसिका तृण वनस्पति स्वापदान आकीट पतंग इपीलिकम धर्मम च अधर्मम च सत्यम च अनृतम च साधु च असाधु च हृदयज्ञं च अहृदयज्ञं च यद्वै वां नाम अभविष्यति न अभविष्यति धर्मः न अधर्मः यज्ञपेष्यति नानृतम् न साधु न साधु न हृदयज्ञो न हृदयज्ञो वागेव एतत् सर्वम् विज्ञापयति वाचमुपास्व. He has given a list of every conceivable thing in this world, all the objects of sense, the five elements, all the living beings, in every kind of species, everything that you can conceptually know, pleasure and pain, knowable, unknowable, righteousness, unrighteousness, virtue and vice, good and bad, this and that, what not, every blessed thing in this world. All these are objects of knowledge, about which you have plenty of information, whose name you are acquainted with. And because of this principle I have stated just now, speech is superior to all this, because they are the causative factors behind the names of these objects whose knowledge you have in full. So if you have a complete knowledge of the principle of speech, the science of speech itself, then you will know everything about all languages. And therefore, every science that is expressed in language, whoever meditates on speech as the absolute, gains everything that is possible within the limit of that realm. Sayo vacham brahmeti upaste yavat vacho gatam tatra asya yatha kamacharo bhavati. यो वाचम ब्रह्मेत्युपास्ते अस्ति भगवो वाचो भूय इति वाचो वाव भूय अस्ति इति तन्मे भगवान ब्रवीत्ति. यू आर फ्री टू द एक्सटेंट ऑफ योर नॉलेज. सो नॉलेज इज पावर. दिस इज अ ग्रेट कंक्लूजन दैट वी कैन ड्रॉ फ्रॉम दीज डिस्क्रिप्शंस ऑफ द नेचर ऑफ नॉलेज. Wherever there is real knowledge, there is also power to the extent of the operation of that knowledge. And knowledge becomes power only to the extent also of the applicability of that knowledge in respect of that object to which that knowledge pertains. If the knowledge is not applicable, it is not power. Otherwise, it will be only theoretical learning. So, Narada is told that to the extent of the operation of the principle of speech, you are free, but meditate on it as the absolute, because beyond that your mind cannot go. But is there anything beyond that? Says Narada, yes, there is something beyond that. The principle of speech, or whatever blessed thing there can be as the precedent of the expression of language, all this is controlled by the mind. Without the functioning of the mind, there would be no expression of speech, nor any language, nor definition, nor learning. So naturally, mind is superior to speech, as speech is superior to ordinary name. The mind is the cause of all these expressions. Mano vava, vacho bhuya. Beyond speech and superior to speech is the mind. Yatha vaidveva amalake deva kole dvau vacho mutti ranubhavati. एवं वाचम च नाम च मनः अनुभवति स यदा मनसा मनस्यति मंत्रानधीयया इति अथ अधीते कर्माणि प्रवृत्ता इति अथ कुरुते पुत्रांश्च पशुंश्च इच्छेया इति इच्छते एमं च लोकम अमुं च इच्छेय इति इच्छते मनोख्यात्मा मनो हि लोकः मनो हि ब्रह्मा मन उपास्व इति. Here is a glorification of the functions of the mind and the capacity of the mind. Mind is superior naturally, because unless the mind functions well, the senses cannot operate, there will be no speech and no nomenclature, no learning. Just as says Sanat Kumara, two fruits of whatever kind, they may be myrobalan or berry or any kind of fruit, can be held together in the fist of the hand. Any two objects which are small can be tightly held in the fist of one's hand. The palm of one's hand folded contains within its fold the two fruits or two objects within it. So does the mind contain within itself both speech and name. Speech and name are contained within the mind as your fist can contain whatever is inside it. This is the power of the mind. Whatever you do only through the mind, you know it very well. You think first before you express yourself in speech or utter a name, etc. You think, let me study, and then you study. You think, let me do work, and then you start working. You think, let me have this and let me have that, and then you put forth effort in that direction. You begin to perform various types of actions in this world after thinking first. So thinking is prior to every other deed or effort. Mind is supreme in life. It is well known to every one of us. The mind is practically your individual self. When you refer to yourself, usually in practical life, you are referring to the mind only. It is me, you say. What do you mean by me? You are referring to the mind, nothing more than that. And the mind has assumed the selfhood, which really does not belong to it, by superimposition of characters. As the mirror shines in sunlight, so does the mind assume selfhood by the transference of the characters of self into itself. So for all practical purposes of life, the mind is the self. It is the individuality within us. The mind is anything that you achieve in this world or in the other world. Because what you call the world is nothing but the field of experience. The range of your experience is called the world in which you are living. And all the experiences of your life are nothing but the expressions of the actions that you perform, behind which there is the mind that thinks. So your world of experience is actually controlled, directed by the mind. So you may say, in a sense, mind is the world. As the mind is yourself in this empirical realm. So Narada, meditate on mind as Brahman, mind as the Absolute. Whatever the mind can think, let that be brought within the purview of the object of meditation. So this is perhaps the last stage which ordinary people can reach in meditation. What can they do beyond the level of the thought of their mind? So try to find out what are the possibilities of the mind and bring together into a state of harmony all the conceptual objects in an artistic manner. The pattern of thought should be beautiful. It should be complete. This is the meaning of the Absolute. We have to remember it again. The Absolute is the completeness of any particular concept, whatever that concept be. So here you have to reach the ultimate point possible by the mind. And that arrangement of the conceptual objects should be such that nothing should be left out of purview. The reason for the movement of the mind away from the object chosen in meditation is because of a subtle indication within that there is something outside the object conceived in the mind. The mind should include every blessed thing. Therefore, there is no chance of the mind going away from the object. And so, the mental object is not any particular symbol of the physical object, but everything that the mind can think. This is the mental object. So, Narada, here you are in the mental realm of meditation. Consider mind as all and master it in such a way that it becomes one with your being. It does not remain merely as an external function of yours, outwardly working, of which you have no control. It is yours. You are a master of your mind. It has become you. This generally does not happen in practical life. Though we say that the mind is me, we are not masters of the mind. We have many occasions when it is revealed to our surprise and sorrow that the mind is not ourself. Though wrongly we say mind is me. If that is me, well, I should be a complete master of it. But it is not true. As the wind blows, the mind blows itself in various directions, and we are drifted in the direction of the blow of the wind of the mind. So the mind acts as a master. It does not act as our own self. So it is not true that the mind is the true self. But it has to be absorbed into the self in meditation so that it gets controlled. Complete control is exercised only to the extent of the absorption of a particular thing into one's own self. Anything that is one with you, that is controlled by you, of that you are a master. And you are not a master of anything that is outside you. So, in the realm of the mind, be a master. Control the mind completely and rule it over by identification of your true being with everything that the mind can think. This is one stage of meditation. Says Sanat Kumara to Narada. Hari Om Tat Sat. Om Aapyayanti Mamangani Vakranachatru Shrotram Athobalam Indriyani Cha Sarvani Sarvam Brahma Upanishadam Maham Brahma Nirakuriyam Mama Brahma Nirakarot Anirakaranam Yastu Tadatmani Nirateya Upanishattu Dharmaste Nuyukantu Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Tat Sat.